The content of this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only. Nothing you hear today constitutes financial, investment, legal, or tax advice. Always consult qualified professionals before making decisions about your business.
What if I told you that most businesses could make 30% more profit without adding a single new customer? No new marketing spend, no new sales team, no new product, just running what you already have, but better. That's what we're discussing today on Education. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about operational efficiency. You know, top line revenue is usually the sexy number. That's where you want to see the growth a lot of times. A lot of them aren't actually looking at the revenue and seeing what can I be doing with this to help, you know, add to my bottom line. And there's so many things on the income statement. You know, you have the top line revenue, but so everything underneath is really how you're controlling costs and optimizing your business in a way that streamlines everything for profitability. So today we're going to go over a few different aspects of your operations, your systems, that's your process, your people, and your metrics. So we're going to go through a few different businesses and how they approach each one. And hopefully, we'll tie this together for the small business owners out there in terms of ways they can help distill some of these lessons down to their existing businesses.
Yeah. And so we're actually going to look at three. The first would be, I believe, McDonald's, and then Toyota. I can't remember what the last one is, but we'll just continue off of this. So for the listener audience, we do have a slide up here. It's called the efficiency gap. So we have, for every $1 of revenue, how much do you keep as operating profit? So for most small businesses, they have 5 to 15 cents. They're busy, working hard, but not very efficient. And whereas you look at a larger one, and I think a good one for this is actually McDonald's, because everybody knows they're pretty fast and efficient with everything they do. McDonald's actually is 47 cents. Same dollar in nearly half the stays. The difference isn't luck, but it's not scale. It's three things, and every business can pull them. So we'll go take a look at the levers here, which we'll say again, it's process, people, and metrics. So for what is operational efficiency? You need to get more output from the same inputs, more revenue from the same team, more profit from the same revenue. As Steven said, revenue growth is visible. That's your kind of your sexy number. And the efficiency is the invisible number. That's the stuff that most people don't really see, but actually a lot of groups tend to look for when they actually go to either purchase or take a look at your business to invest in. Because efficiency, it shows up as a margin. No one throws a party for a better operating ratio, but that itself, it builds wealth. And then actually McKinsey too did find that improved operational efficiency increases productivity by 25% on average, same business, but just run better. And I know everybody has a business that they wish they could run better. So we'll be able to solve those today for you.
So just breaking out again, the process, people, and the metrics. So process is, what are we doing to eliminate waste? Finding what works, making sure processes are documented, and what is working, make sure that you're putting it in a way that can, scale across your organization. So we'll be talking about Toyota and McDonald's as, two of, businesses to highlight that really have the processes down. As far as people are concerned, making sure that you have the right roles, the right accountability structure, the right organizational structure behind that. And, for example, with Walmart, they're able to cut costs by 40% by restructuring what people and automation do. And finally, with metrics, really just getting down to, the data that you have, tracking the right things. And, we're going to look at five numbers reviewed weekly. You can't improve what you can't see, and most owners are flying blind. So at the end of this, we'll have a few different metrics that you should be scoring yourself on and tracking on a regular basis. And that will at least give you a foundational aspect to be making sure that you're tracking if you aren't already.
Yeah. So the first one we're going to talk about is process. In process, we have a good one for you. It's Toyota and McDonald's. Everybody's familiar with those. At least I hope you are. Big fan of McDonald's myself. But to give you some context behind Toyota, post-World War II, Toyota couldn't afford waste. They built systems to actually eliminate it, and they came up with what's known as the Toyota Production System, otherwise known as TPS. The core idea was every activity either adds value for the customer or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, then you must cut it. And I think they like to call it, as our producers say, Muda. That is the Japanese way or Japanese term for it. Apologize if I'm wrong. The seven wastes were waiting, overproduction, transport, inventory, motion, defects, and overprocessing. Every single one of these exists within your business as of right now. Kaizen is a continuous improvement as a daily discipline. I believe that's another Japanese word that they use for it. not a once a year initiative, small changes every day compound into multiple gains. And once again, these are numbers that we like for people to look at every day, because if you try to peel back an onion kind of at the end of the year, rather than going layer by layer and getting straight to the core, you're not going to be able to find exactly what efficiencies you're missing out on or kind of what waste you're going through. And believe it or not, a lot of companies actually have taken this Toyota model and used it for themselves. Like Nike actually applied the TPS, once again, the Toyota production system principles, and they were actually able to reduce defects by 50%. They had 40% faster lead times, and that ultimately led to a 20% productivity gain. The next one would be McDonald's. McDonald's doesn't have better food than most restaurants. I believe they do. They have a better process than every other restaurant. I'm sure everybody's familiar with the Speedy system. It was actually a system that the McDonald's brothers developed in the very beginning. I don't know if any of you guys have seen the Croc movie before. Yeah, but the Speedy system was originally developed because most of the time, like, fast food wasn't really an idea back then. You actually have to go sit down, order, and wait. Whereas McDonald's came up with a system called Speedy, once again, which they were able to find out and limit kind of their menu items to only be a certain amount of things. So they know they need to produce these amount of things because that's what people are going to actually purchase. And that ended up actually growing into how they actually operate within the actual restaurant itself. So you had the people that were cooking the buns, the people that were cooking the burgers, everything was stationed up in a certain way, like a manufacturing line almost. And that's what allowed them to be able to give you your hamburger or cheeseburger in 60 seconds or less. Now, obviously, the menu has grown more, so times may have varied. But regardless, you know, they're really efficient within how they built it. And then, you know, they partnered up with Ray Kroc and off it went. But I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah. And, you know, for the small business owners out there, a lot of times for this process optimization stuff shows itself is identifying your bottlenecks, right? So if you know that, you know, you have a process of doing things and you may have one person waiting on something to get done before they can get started, you know, trying to really try to hone in on where those bottlenecks are and where you can, you know, approach, you know, either adding headcount in some places or for the person that is, you know, sitting idle waiting for something to get done before they can get started, you know, what are some value add tasks that I can be giving, you know, to this person, you know, to make sure that they're able to, you know, be productive while you're waiting on, you know, something else to get done within your business. So there's a lot of, you know, different ways to go about it. But let's say you have somebody that's waiting for something to get done. You know, you can either, you know, add, you know, more to that previous process to make sure that gets done faster. And that way you have a, you know, smoother, you know, transition between, you know, step A and step B getting done. Or like I said, you know, adding, you know, more responsibilities or more, you know, value add tasks, you know, to that person that's waiting so that, you know, their idle time isn't being, you know, wasted into, you know, your income statement. So it's going to be a lot of different for different types of businesses. And again, with the Toyota system, you also may have heard of Lean Six Sigma. There's different types of, you know, process improvement strategies out there. Certainly worth looking into, especially in, you know, the manufacturing business. If you're in a light manufacturing type of capacity where you are seeing a lot more of like step-by-step, you know, producing a widget or, you know, some sort of product, and there's a kind of a manufacturing component behind that, that can easily, you know, it's easy to spot kind of where those bottlenecks are in trying to optimize that quality in one direction. But again, going through the process standpoint, so a few questions that should be worth asking yourself are, what are the three things your business does most often and are they documented? So in addition to talking about the bottlenecks, but also making sure that these processes are done in a smooth fashion, that you're not having to reinvent the wheel every time you're going through a particular process. So if you were to hire a new hire on day one, would they be able to pick things up without having to ask you for everything? And if that's the case, then you don't have a process, you have a habit. And again, really important that we're documenting this stuff so that, you know, there is a standard operating procedure for, you know, a new admin that comes in, a new marketing person that comes in, a new technician that comes in, a way to, you know, get them up to speed quickly in a documented fashion and in a way that controls the quality.
Yeah, and to kind of go back once again, that Kaizen, that's really the compounding, you know, force. These as Steven said, you really need to take track of these and look at these every day so you can make those small adjustments and the small improvements. Like, once again, it shows from cars to, I mean, hamburgers and cheeseburgers that you get every day. Obviously, they didn't have the system perfect day one, but they're actually able to recall and figure out and create a repeatable like task or a process so that your processes and the SOPs that Steven was mentioning or your operating procedures are repeatable, meaning that if you have a business in Ohio, a business in, you know, Florida or neighboring states, that everything is kind of run and done the exact same way. So that way you can also help with quality control as well. So this really helps with a lot of different things.
And another thing to mention is, you know, the most important thing, if you don't have these things documented, is just get something out there that's, you know, more usable. It might only be 80% complete, but that's where the Kaizen comes in. This idea of continuous improvement where, you know, have your stuff documented, have your processes in place, and then you can iterate on those as you go. So, you know, just because you have a process, you know, put in place doesn't mean you have to be sticking with that, you know, for the rest of time. You can always be making sure, and this should be, you know, something you embolden your team about, is if something can be done better, let's make sure that we're, you know, changing these processes as we go. So this idea of continuous improvement, not just having these procedures in place, but also building on them over a period of time as you start finding, you know, ways that can, you know, be improved upon.
Just kind of like sports team runs, you know, you have to practice the plays, but even still, you know, you face various defenses, you may have to make small adjustments, but, you know, you don't become perfect by just making large changes at once. It's continuous over time.
And a second point, so where does your work slow down, get stuck, or need to get redone? So, you know, if you have, especially for your high volume tasks, you know, if you're finding yourself getting stuck in a particular process or a particular task, especially one that's either, you know, driving your revenue or something that is creating a lot of lag time, let's make sure that you have, you know, finding the sticking points, finding those bottlenecks, and finding a way to, you know, smooth that out as best as possible. So, you know, again, it could be, you know, we need to balance out kind of our structure in our company. Like, we need more people on, you know, we need more, you know, customer support, or we need more, you know, technicians, or we need more X, Y, and Z. You know, if you're finding yourself waiting a lot on admin tasks to get done, needing another office person, you know, those types of things that ensure that, you know, these, you know, that you have these high volume tasks that are frictionless, as opposed to things that end up catching up your, you know, catching your business and causing that inefficiency and creating that waste.
We actually spoke with a manufacturer before, and they were actually going to give us, they get quotes a lot for a lot of different products that people come to them that they wish to make. And they found that they were losing a lot of business just because their engineers couldn't necessarily keep up with the amount of demands and drawings and testing. But it wasn't actually the manufacturing, it was actually the engineers. So in order for them to be able to up their sales and to bring in some more revenue, they actually had to smooth out the engineering process and actually take on some more engineers so they can take on more projects. Because once again, the manufacturing was there and the sales was there. It was just getting the drawings to be completed and everything up to spec. So that was a good one that we were able to speak to about. And then I guess the last question is, if you disappeared for 30 days, would the process run or would it break? The answer tells you whether you built a business or a job. Process that requires you or the one that needs to be documented first. So for instance, what we mean by this is if you find yourself being the one that has to run around and accomplish three different tasks, so we'll get back to this engineering or manufacturing example. The lead engineer found himself having to do multiple different drawings a day and do multiple different testings and make sure that everybody was completed said testings and drawings. So if we actually removed him from the process, it'd be quite detrimental to their business. We found that they needed to actually improve that. So, you know, if he left on vacation, then they were kind of screwed. But when they brought in some more engineers, they actually were able to smooth out the process and get it a lot faster and actually be able to complete it on time, and would shorten their proposals, which allowed them to retain more business and actually get more business. So the second lever is people. And a lot of owners find this to be the most uncomfortable lever because it requires honest conversation about the structure and accountability they have set. And you have to really separate the people from the problem and from the headcount. Most businesses don't need more people. They need clear people or clear designed roles for this. We have an example here for you. It's actually called One Digital. I don't know if anybody's familiar with the company, but they were spending about $120,000 a year on interview scheduling. Once again, that's $120,000 a year just on interview scheduling. Not hiring, just, you know, scheduling the interviews. That was 40% of their team's, their talent team's time. That's insane that you're spending $120,000 a year on 40% of somebody's time for hiring. Just scheduling, not even actually hiring. But they actually were able to automate it. And they dropped their costs down to nearly zero. The team redirected those hours to actually hiring better people. That's not just an AI story. I know a lot of people think, you know, your AI automation, that might help. It could, but it's a someone was doing $0 task story. It happens in every business and every week. Another one, 42, is Walmart. Walmart cut U.S. delivery costs per order by 40% across three consecutive quarters, not by cutting people, by restructuring what people did and automation did. Automated fulfillment centers run roughly double the productivity of legacy manual sites. So the lesson here is productivity isn't about working harder. It's about making sure you have the right capacity and it is applied to the right task. So for instance, if you have, you know, to go back to kind of a simpler example, if you are in a restaurant and you have three people manning the grill, when in reality you need, you know, two more people to plate so that the orders can get out faster, then that's where you need to move one person over. You don't need to hire, you can train one of the chefs or grill masters to move over to the actual line portion and start actually constructing the dish rather than just leaving it up to, you know, one or two people. So I know we have a couple questions here for this. We don't want to waste your guys' time too much on a lot of this, but for, once again, the listeners, we do have a visual podcast. I highly recommend it, but we do have three questions, which is, you know, how many hours last week did your team spend on tasks a human shouldn't be doing? So this could be admin work, could be data entry, could be manual reporting, scheduling. If you can't find the number, that's one of the things that you should be able to audit.
Yeah. And especially with, you know, we could do entire series, not just an episode on, you know, AI automation, but especially with a lot of, you know, the resources out there now, it's becoming increasingly critical to be able to, you know, automate the tasks, you know, where you can. So, you know, especially in the office, a lot of admin work, you know, a lot of stuff on spreadsheet, pulling numbers from one source to another, finding ways that can, you know, first of all, be able to centralize that information and be able to, you know, automate some of those tasks so that, you know, an admin isn't spending, you know, half her day, you know, pulling numbers from one spreadsheet to another and so on and so forth. And so, you know, take that as a, or I mean, you can, you know, can you automate, you know, your reporting? Do you have a dashboard where numbers are being pulled automatically and you're not having an admin, you know, pull up all this information for you and put it into a your report on a weekly basis? You know, is there a scheduling optimization that can be done? Or do you have, you know, do you have an operating software? You know, let's say you are, you know, have, you know, a company that uses technicians, you're in a field service type company. Are you trying to leverage that software to be able to, you know, optimize your schedules? You know, sometimes they don't get it 100% right, but, you know, does it get you, you know, 90% of the way there? And then, you know, might need a, you know, once over to make sure that, you know, the routing makes sense, you know, and this sort of thing.
What's kind of cool about that is Sherwin-Williams actually has the painting company. They have a pretty good program for all my painters out there and commercial painters where you can actually take photos of a room and give it rough dimensions of what everything is. And it'll actually kind of give you a recommendation of how much paint you would need to buy. So it'll help you build pretty close, about 90 to 95% accurate quote in real time without having you have to go back and figure out exactly how much you paint you need for everything. You can do it live right there almost with the customer to give them a rough idea of what would happen or how much it would cost.
Yeah. And yeah, so certainly, you know, make sure that, you know, if you're not on a particular software or, you know, always be, you're looking at different types of software. Obviously you have, you know, QuickBooks and, you know, the various accounting software is pretty universal. And then, you know, depending on the type of business you're in, there's usually, you know, a couple different softwares that you need, whether you're in a, you know, field service type profession, you know, industrial, you know, there's a lot of different things, but making sure that you have your team using software and making sure that it's making their lives easier. And going on the second question, can you describe every person's primary responsibility in one sentence? So this is where you're making sure, you know, the roles are clearly defined, that you have an organizational structure in place. So you know how, you know, the functions of your business, you know, how it's flowing, all the way up to you, ideally having, a team of people you're delegating stuff to. You still may be, have a lot of primary responsibility, maybe sales or business development, as you're trying to, be able to delegate and be able to offset a lot of your typical day-to-day work and trying to get yourself, removed from the business from a working in the business capacity, so to speak. And again, it also starts with just, making sure everybody's roles are understood and that they're clearly, clearly identified. So if, they can't, they probably can't either. Ambiguity about roles is the source of most people problems in businesses. So if somebody doesn't, really know what they're doing in their company, that's obviously an issue. And obviously they may know some things, but if they can't clearly, determine, what things they're responsible for, what things another person's responsible for, it can create a lot of confusion and headaches. So even, especially in the office, there's, some work that might be, responsible for an office manager, then another admin. Somebody may be doing some marketing, but it's also handled by somebody else.
Yeah, just like, it's like the movie Office Space. You had, who's the main character again, right? Was it Bill? Bill, our producer, is a big movie expert.
It's like, what exactly do you do here?
He'd always, they went in, they asked, what do you do here? And the guy's relaxed, he got hypnotized, and he goes, I got four different managers telling me I have to fix four different problems of the same TPS report. So not always include like having the same amount of, or increasing the number of people doing the thing, same thing is, not really helpful, but really a good way to describe this would be that movie of Office Space, but please don't steal money.
Yeah. And, just to lend off of that, do you have multiple direct reports or do you have people that have multiple direct reports? And is that causing confusion? So again, making sure you have an organizational chart that's clearly outlining those responsibilities is crucial. So there's no confusion of who's what's responsible for, who they're reporting to, and how that information is flowing up to you. And then lastly, what's the one decision that comes to mind to you every week that shouldn't? So, this kind of ties back to the last answer to the last question, but, if it's something, find out what the right answer is, delegate it. That's 1 hour a week back every week. So we see this a lot with some of our clients is, the escalation paths that are necessary to go to you. Ideally, those escalation paths are for those very few and far between instances where things need to be, brought up to you. But ideally for the, 95%+ of your day-to-day
activities
within your business, there is somebody responsible for that. And then in those very rare instances, are they being, escalated to you or really need your, really need you for the final sign off on, especially for, really big matters. But, a customer complaint shouldn't be going to you. Obviously, if there's a huge chain of escalation that's resulting in that, obviously it's your business and you want to make sure that your reputation is protected. But there's going to be a lot of instances where that can be handled by somebody that either has been working with that customer, has familiarity with them, and so on and so forth. Obviously, like big, business development or maybe a really big sale, or maybe, they need to get your, we're trying to get this contract, but they want to move a little bit on price. Like we need you to be able to, get this across the finish line. Those types of things obviously, might need to go to you. But, if you're getting constantly bombarded, asked about by, if every single customer complaint is flowing up to you, is there a way I can handle that with somebody within my office, somebody that's already dealing with customers? At some point you need to be willing to let go, even, with some of those maybe small customer complaints. Ideally, you started this company, you're trying to keep the reputation sterling, but you also need to make sure that, you have a team and a culture that is also, aligned with, with your company's, goals and the reputation they're trying to maintain. And, you're putting themselves in a position to champion your company and, be able to address those types of issues. So customer complaints is one, but there's obviously.
Yeah. And that kind of brings me to our last point. I mean, yes, you shouldn't be dealing with every customer complaint, but that could be an improvement on the process. Like we said in the last example, that could be an improvement where you just do, a weekly or every 2 week review of what the complaints are. And that might actually be able to help smooth out and improve your process. So that could be something. Obviously you don't want to ignore all customer complaints, but the ones that are very important, yes, they should be escalated or a deal closing, for instance, but.
And that ties back to the process side of things is, that's a very good point by Christian. If you can, obviously we're not suggesting that you'd have a customer complaint coming in every day, but, obviously depending on the type of volume of work you do, if you're an e-commerce seller and you're doing hundreds of orders a day, and you get, you know, a handful of complaints. Obviously, that seems like a lot just in pure raw numbers. Like, oh, I got five complaints a day, but I'm selling, you know, 500 units of a product. That's obviously, you know, 1% percent rate. So obviously every business is different, but, you know, if you can see where that's a very good point by Christian is, you know, those customer complaints can sometimes, you know, be an opportunity for improvement. So is there something that broke down along your processes? Is there something that, you know, needed to be improved upon on your, you know, a product you might have been selling?
Be a response rate, could be anything, but it's good to keep those and be able to manage those because they can tell a lot about what's failing within your current system. So
yeah, it could be,
if it's, you know, a billing issue, you know, you got to speak to billing on how to better handle this. If it's, you know, it could be even a case of if you're like a store owner, if it's like a case of people charging cards and declining the cards, you can figure that out. But it's just another way of taking a review of your business and taking note of it.
Yes. A lot of times for like those field service companies, it's, well, I didn't know when this, you know, company was coming. Like I was given a window of time. I didn't get any updates, or, you know, I hadn't heard from them in over a day or something like that. You know, is there a communication process that you can have that make sure that, you know, something I had in my company is we would, you know, let them know the day before we were coming. We would give them a time window. And obviously, you know, you try to, you know, operate within that time window as best as possible. Obviously, you know, things happen. And then also we would call when we were on our way too. And obviously it's tedious having to do that, but that ultimately results in, you know, much lack of, you know, complaints going down, you know, clarity, you know, customer clarity. It, you know, improves customer experience that, you know, having those processes turns into a good customer review when you're done with the work. And, you know, that good customer review turns into, you know, more online leads when they see a good Google review. You know, that, all that stuff kind of has a flywheel effect, or even though you're adding, you know, a process into the mix, you're able to hit a lot of different aspects of your company and improve upon it that way. So look, I get, but that's a great point by Christian, looking at those potential complaints or, you know, seeing where those things break down. And usually customers, if they're seeing issues, can kind of help put a spotlight on where those issues may reside in your company and an opportunity for improvement.
We'll move on to the next here. It's actually metrics, which is the third lever that we mentioned. But, you know, most owners are flying blind. They don't really know their top line revenue. They're just kind of taking a guess at everything. You know, most of them track revenue, some track profit, almost really none really track the operational numbers. And that tells you why those figures are and what they are. Managing, a lot of people like to manage just by gut instead of data, which means you're probably really far behind the actual problem itself. Could be up to like 6 months, and you'll feel it a lot sooner than before you could prevent it. And, you know, 67% of industrial companies are actually struggling with paper-based processes in 2024. And we were actually speaking with a HVAC business recently. They're actually going in to acquire another one. And the first thing the owner told us was that the former owner is still running everything off of what? Like a big,
like a bulletin cork board type of setup. So they're pinning stuff onto a wall, setting out their schedule that way.
And, you know, they couldn't measure anything. And, you know, if a piece of paper falls through the cracks, you're just going to forget about it. You'll never know it. So
I didn't know what a CRM was, you know, or customer relationship management. Didn't know any of those terms, you know, no customer database other than maybe a filing cabinet, but no way to actually manage that and try to use that as a way to, you know, remarket to your existing customers.
You know, we're not saying you have to do everything. Well, you should be doing everything digitalized. We're not saying you don't have to get rid of pen and paper. Certainly use the pen and paper, but try to at least get a better habit of using a digitalized system to actually implement it. So when you're on the phone, I understand it's easier to write things down, but it's very important to at least note that within a system so that you can keep pulling up that system without having to go to that bulletin board. But
yeah, and it's increasingly, you know, more necessary. I mean, every once in a while you're caught, you know, you might be in your car. I mean, I've had this situation in some of the other companies where you're driving, you end up having to pull over, you write down information if like a, you know, someone was out during that day, you know, and you're the, you know, backup line, you know, in case a call, you know, falls through to you, needing to make sure that, you know, got to write that down, but then also, you know, within, you know, short order before you forget, you know, get it documented in a system so that, you know, not just you, but everybody else in your organization that's, you know, having touch points with those customers are able to see the activity.
Yeah. And we do have some metrics here that we think matter a lot, and it's revenue, employees, gross margin by line, cost per transaction, utilization rate, CAC versus LTV. But actually, we're not also the people that think of this, but McKinsey, I don't know if anybody knows who that is, but it's a large, really large consulting
firm
that is world famous for this stuff.
Yeah, they say if you track 5 to 7 core KPIs, consistently outperform those tracking none by roughly 25% in productivity. So just to backtrack a little bit, as Christian said, revenue divided by employee. So revenue per employee, gross margin by each service line or product line, cost per transaction, utilization rate, and the CAC and LTV, that's the customer acquisition cost versus lifetime value of the customer. So what a lot of people don't understand is, you know, revenue you think is, you know, your sales, but the revenue is really an output of things like CAC and LTV. So if you're, before you even get to revenue, you have your marketing funnel that's creating, you know, potential, you know, leads. You're looking at the cost that your marketing spend across all those leads, which ones are converting to customers, and then also, you know, how long are those customers, you know, staying with you over the life of their time as being a customer. So obviously, you see this a lot of times with software as a service. That's where it's really got popularized, but you're seeing this, you know, knowledge kind of being brought into, you know, even the main street businesses where saying, okay, I'm, you know, spending this much on leads, I'm converting 10% of them into customers. And then those customers are staying with me for on an average of, you know, a year and a half, you know, 18 months. And, you know, that a lot of, and then from that, you're building out your revenue, and everything is kind of downstream from, you know, that initial marketing and converting those potential customers into customers and into revenue. The gross margin by line, obviously, that's going to be your cost. So, you know, we spoke about this last episode, but really understanding your unit economics. So for any given product or service, you know, what are the costs going into that on a per service basis or per product basis, and building out your, you know, understanding your gross margin from that. And that can also help you with, you know, seeing where you can, you know, along that, you know, cost structure, you know, where those things could be optimized. Obviously, we have on your variable cost, you have labor, you have, you know, potentially a material cost that's going into something. You know, obviously, if you're we'll get back to field service, if you're a plumber or an HVAC, you know, you have your labor and material, right? That's usually the two largest components of your cost within a particular product or service. And then, you know, there might be some ancillary things that go into that as well. A lot of times I had a roll-off business. Fuel, we would kind of try to track as a variable cost, even though a lot of times it can also be viewed as an overhead type metric too. But the more I could try to figure out those variable costs, the more I had a better sense of, you know, my gross margin by product. So if we can get to those five numbers and put them in a dashboard that you're reviewing weekly, that enables you to really manage by, you know, the data that you're seeing come in as opposed to just going with your gut. It allows you to forecast and potentially, you know, be able to address issues before they really even become, you know, bigger headaches.
Yeah. And usually when we go into these business advising meetings, you know, we don't really discuss the P&L. That's not usually our first item. It's actually the operations and how that's going. Because, you know, if you don't have a deliverable SOP or if your operations are a mess, you'll never be able to see how we can actually improve your said business. So it's not always about the numbers to begin with, but in this case, there will be times where we do need to actually start looking at P&Ls and balance sheets and figuring out where your costs are. So the first would definitely be operations. And then we need to start looking at these. And we recommend that you do too. These dashboards that we talk about are always live and you're constantly updating. So you can exactly see where you sit. Kind of gives you a better look underneath the hood, as they would say. And it's giving you like a real time x-ray to see how healthy you are standing.
But your five most important operational numbers, can you recite them by looking, by not looking? If not, you're managing by feel. The first step is deciding which five numbers matter most to your business. So again, you know, we talked a little bit about CAC and LTV. Those are kind of marketing, you know, numbers. But as far as, you know, operational numbers, we have, you know, the gross margin by line, revenue by employee. So, you know, a lot of times, you know, if you have a especially for going back to field service, just because it's a very common, you know, business we work with, but the plumbing and electrical and anything that has a fleet of work trucks that you're sending out, your revenue by employee is obviously a nice one. It's something that we look at a lot of times when we're analyzing businesses, is we can see if a company is in, you know, a little bit is either not running optimally, or if it's, it seems like there could be a lot of opportunity for ways to be cut, is if you see that revenue per employee being really low. Obviously, if you're paying a tech $50,000 a year, you want to be seeing, you know, $150,000 to $200,000, you know, revenue for that. If it's below $100,000, yeah, it technically looks like it's, you know, it's obviously above the cost that you're paying the technician, but that's also, you know, that's not accounting for overhead. It's not accounting for, you know, the profit margin you need to have for your company. It's a very easy way to assess, you know, is this company, you know, running in a good way? And so obviously that's a number you want to see, you know, increase, you know, either by, you know, improving the, you know, operational efficiency of your employees, or by being able to increase revenue without adding headcount. But, you know, figure out what those metrics are for you. Make sure that you're tracking them on a, you know, weekly basis in your following, and making sure you have a way to track that data and actually, you know, make sure that, you know, another thing is just making sure your data is clean. So make sure that, you know, before everything else, excuse me, your the processes are also entailing making sure that this data is input in a way that's not going to get misconstrued.
Yeah, and that kind of gives over the second question, which is, do you know your revenue per employee today? Is it going up or is it going down? Like Steven said, it's important to know this. Otherwise, you know, we talked about it in the last episode, but usually, generally, rent and labor are your two biggest costs. So if you can find a way to mitigate your rent and your costs, that's one way of looking at it. And I don't know if anybody here is familiar with the history of Pittsburgh or just history in general, but there's a guy by the name of Andrew Carnegie who started U.S. Steel. But one of his biggest keys to success was he was constantly watching costs, because he said if you watch costs, dollars will follow afterwards. So instead of really worrying about the, you know, revenue or sales, you got to really watch your costs first before you can then look to the future. The last question is, if something in your business started underperforming, would your metrics tell you before it hit the bank account? So if the answer is no, you're reactive. The best operators are predictive. They see problems in the numbers before they feel them in cash. So once again, you can tell if you're kind of falling behind pace before you start feeling that you're falling behind pace. And you'll be able to see this by looking at your numbers every week, every month, you know, whatever that duration of time may be on specific metrics. But this will allow you to kind of perform and be able to fix whatever you need, rather than, you know, the pipe bursting and you having to call a plumber, then, you know, a restoration company, so forth and so on. You'd be able to actually replace the pipe before it actually bursts, the metaphorical pipe, that is. So the right sequence for these is, you always have to have your process first. So you need a document before you delegate. You can't hold people accountable to a process that doesn't exist. So once again, this is that McDonald's Speedy, the Toyota productive system, the TPS. The second one is people. Once the process is clear, the right person for the role becomes obvious. So does the wrong structure. So once again, you either are missing people in one area or you have too many in another, and you can't really figure that out unless you document it first. The third is metrics. Now you can measure whether the process runs and whether people execute it, not before. So that, once again, this is keeping you ahead of schedule, being able to kind of foresee issues before they actually arise. So once again, that is that pipe bursting could be, you know, any example similar to that, if you'd like. So we do have an exercise for you guys. We'd like for you to, one, identify one process in your business that, if it ran better, would have the biggest impact on margin or customer experience. So once again, a good way to do this is to look back at those customer complaints or sit with your team, you know, every other week or so, or look at those weekly. The second is, you need to document it. Every step, every handoff, every decision point, and you need to write that down. And then hopefully implement that into some sort of electronic database. The third is, you need to ask if the right person in charge of it, and do they know how success is measured? So once again, if you don't have a clear defined role for said person or what they need to accomplish, then you wouldn't be able to understand, you know, if this person is correct for the job. Once again, like how Steven said, if you have a tech that you're paying $50,000 a year and he's, you know, falling short, you have to figure out why that reason may be. And, you know, you need to make sure that the tech is at least hitting however many jobs that they need to do. Number four, pick one number that tells you whether it's working, and you need to review it weekly. So once again, those are those dashboard items that we want you to take a look at. This allows you to stay ahead of the game.
Take this week to, you know, again, look through your processes, find the ones you can improve or you know, document, you know, one for this week. I think it'd have a, you know, meaningful impact. And again, as you look towards your, you know, eventual exit, you know, these are the types of things you'll want to have, you know, documented and tracked, because, you know, tying back to, you know, we want to help, you know, these companies be able to have an exit path, and all these things are going to help add to the overall value for your company. And as investors or a potential buyer is looking at you, they're going to want to see, you know, these processes documented, you know, that you have strong margins, strong profitability, that you're doing the things that, you know, they're going to want to see for your eventual exit. So again, processes, you know, again, when a critical part and, you know, easy thing to overlook. And, you know, it's not just about adding revenue. Obviously, you know, for small businesses, there's a lot of, you know, potentially a lot of still, you know, growth that you can still get into. But, you know, let's get past that and actually look down to the, you know, your cost structure, you know, how you're organized, and, you know, overall just, you know, increase the profitability with what you have, in addition to, you know, potentially finding, you know, additional sales as well. So for that's episode 3 of SCG Education. This is Steven and Christian signing off.